Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
DB11 was a large randomized trial in the neoadjuvant setting for really our highest risk patients. These were patients who had node-positive disease or greater than or equal to T3 tumors.
Today, Drs. Isaacs and Traina join the podcast to discuss 2025 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, key updates in early-stage HER2-positive breast cancer in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Claudine Isaacs. I'm a professor of medicine and oncology, the associate director of clinical research, the leader of the clinical breast cancer program, and the co-director of the Fisher Center for Hereditary Cancer Research at the Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C.
And hello, I'm Tiffany Traina. I'm the Vice Chair of Oncology in the Department of Medicine and Section Head of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Clinical Research Program at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York.
We're glad to be back with you here at the 2025 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. There's already been a lot of compelling science presented, and we're looking forward to walking through some of the studies and new treatment approaches that caught our attention, especially in the HER2-positive breast cancer space. Ready to dive in, Tiffany?
Absolutely, Claudine.
So just to get us started, let me start off by asking you about which abstracts or presentations really caught your attention. There were a number of updates from some new and exciting trials in the early stage space in HER2 positive. And there were some updates presented at San Antonio. So maybe you can start off by walking us through some of the newer data and the salient data presented on DB11.
Happy to. So DB11 was a large randomized trial in the neoadjuvant setting for really our highest risk patients. These were patients who had node-positive disease or greater than or equal to T3 tumors. And patients were randomized to either T-DXd followed by THP or AC-THP. There was a third arm of T-DXd for 8 cycles, but that was actually closed early because it appeared it was never going to meet or exceed the control arm. The primary endpoint of this study was pathologic complete response. And so if we think about the patient characteristics of who is enrolled in that trial, about 2/3 of these patients had hormone receptor positive disease, 90% of these patients had node positive disease, and just over half of them had T0 to T2 tumors. The primary endpoint was really impressive. So overall pathologic complete response rate was 67% with T-DXd followed by THP, compared to about 56% with AC-THP. And there were differences in the hormone receptor positive subgroup. So hormone receptor positive tumors had about a 61% PCR versus 52%, not so surprising. And in hormone receptor negative HER2 positive disease, I think we've seen the highest path CR rates we've seen with an 83% PCR rate compared to 67% with ACT. Now, this trial is not powered for event-free survival, but we did see some of those data, and there was a trend towards T-DXd followed by THP appearing somewhat better than AC-THP, but again, this is immature data and not powered to really detect a difference. I think one thing to keep in mind about this trial is that access to post-neoadjuvant therapy was somewhat different than what we see in our practice here in the United States. So only about 50% of patients who failed to achieve a pathologic complete response went on to get T-DM1. And only 20 to 30% of those patients actually got trastuzumab in the adjuvant, sort of post-neoadjuvant setting. Safety, also a concern when we move agents up into the early stage curative setting. And it was really fortunate to see that the T-DXd followed by THP arm actually had lower grade 3 or greater adverse events compared to AC-THP, with only 37% compared to 55% with the control arm. We also want to think about adverse events of special interest. So ILD of all grade with the T-DXd containing arm was only 4.4%. And the control arm had 5%. So reassuring to see with only 4 cycles of T-DXd, ILD rates were quite low. Grade 3 or greater ILD was less than 1% at 0.6%. CHF also was uncommon, no occurrences with T-DXd, and about 1.3% with the anthracycline-containing arm. Some other adverse events that were a little differential and of interest. So there was higher neuropathy with T-DXd, about 45% compared to 35%. Most of those events were really happening during the taxane-containing portion of T-DXd followed by THP. There was a little bit more nausea and vomiting with the antibody-drug conjugate as opposed to the anthracycline-containing regimen. And there was more neutropenia with ACTHP despite the use of growth factor with that dose-dense regimen. So altogether, really exciting data that may be moving the needle with much higher path CR rates, but we really would be curious to see what event-free survival looks like, even though it's not powered to show us that.
All right. So again, really exciting data with T-DXd, moving it up now into the neoadjuvant space. Simultaneously, there was the presentation of the DB05 trial, which was looking at that post-neoadjuvant space for patients who didn't achieve a path CR, and again, trying to look at how T-DXd compared to T-DM1, which has been our standard of care since the Catherine study. So maybe you can talk to us about that trial. And you know, these trials were initially presented, both DB05 and DB11 were initially presented at ESMO, but they were updates on the tolerability and side effect profile. And so we're, you know, integrating all of that for you today in our discussion. But maybe you can tell us a little bit about what DB05 showed, and then we can spend a little time talking about, you know, how we package this all together. And if we have this available, what are we going to do? How are we going to choose where to use which drug?
Yeah, these are really great companion studies in the early stage setting. And so DB05 looked at the residual disease setting for patients with HER2-positive breast cancer following standard of care neoadjuvant HER2-directed therapies. And I think we do need to recognize that this was a very high-risk, large burden of disease patient population. So to be eligible for DB05, you needed inoperable tumors or operable tumors, yet with residual disease in lymph nodes at the time of surgery. So
can I interrupt you just for a second? So just to remind people, if you compare it, so this is sort of the looking at Catherine, so looking at T-DM1 versus T-DXd. But in the Catherine trial, the eligibility was any residual disease. So this was really looking at a higher risk group. It wasn't just if they had node negative only residual disease and didn't have a huge tumor to start with, they wouldn't have been eligible for this.
That's right. That's right. And so as you said, perfectly teed that up, that the trial randomized patients with residual disease to either T-DXd or T-DM1 for 14 cycles. So very much like the Catherine arm as a control arm. And the primary endpoint was invasive disease-free survival, key secondary endpoint of disease-free survival. So when we look at this patient population, half of these patients had inoperable tumors. 80% of them had node-positive disease after neoadjuvant therapy. Almost 80% of them had seen dual HER2-directed antibodies in the neoadjuvant setting. Interestingly, only about half of these patients saw an anthracycline, so presumably a lot of TCHP being used in the neoadjuvant setting, and about 70% had hormone receptor positive disease. And when we saw the primary endpoint at the 3-year mark, invasive disease-free survival had a difference of almost 9%, right? Impressive. So T-DXd affording a 92.4% invasive disease-free survival compared to 83.7% with the control arm. Very significant difference. Hazard ratio is tracking about 0.47. And I think that control arm did worse than what we would have expected in Catherine because of this enrichment for such a high-risk patient population. Those disease-free survival events actually were reducing distant recurrences significantly, about half with 3.1% with T-DXd compared to 6.4% with T-DM1. And we also saw a reduction in CNS metastases, which is a real area of unmet need in this patient population. So 14 cycles of antibody drug conjugate is a significant amount of continued therapy. And so in this trial, only about 75% of patients completed the expected therapy in both arms, in the control arm as well as T-DXd. ILD rates were tracking with what we've seen with T-DXd, about 9 to 10% all grade ILD with T-DXd, only about 1.6% with T-DM1. There was slightly more LV dysfunction seen with T-DXd. And a unique aspect of this trial is that concurrent radiation was permitted. So some of these patients were getting post-mastectomy radiation or breast-conserving radiation, and that did not seem to exacerbate ILD rates, which is reassuring.
Right. And you know, one might have, that's obviously something we would worry about in that patient mm-hmm. population, right? Because we know about the risk of ILD with TDXD and the worry about the combination. So how do we sew this all together? Like, let's say we've got these drugs all available for us. What's your take? Would you prefer to give TDXD in the neoadjuvant setting? Would you prefer to reserve it to give it to the highest risk patients in the post-neoadjuvant? What do we do? I mean, all of these questions are swirling, right?
Absolutely. I think it's a lot to discuss and to noodle. And at this point, I think it's worth saying that TDXD is not yet indicated by the FDA with a label expansion in either of these settings. Neither is it in NCCN guidelines, but I do think these are data we need to contend with for our patients. I think the beauty of the neoadjuvant approach is that we're seeing higher rates of PATH-CR with really only 4 cycles of TDXD and THP. And in the HER2-positive population, achieving a PATH-CR is really associated with better long-term prognosis and outcomes. And so to be able to have more women achieve that PATH-CR and simplify their lives with a better prognosis is really compelling. On the other hand, having event-free survival data from DB11 is really meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And I think there's also, from a toxicity perspective, mm-hmm. right, what we saw in the neoadjuvant space in DB11, what we saw was that it was very well tolerated. It was just 4 cycles.
Yes.
There wasn't a very high rate of ILD. There was a higher rate of ILD in the the post-neoadjuvant space. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could get away with shorter duration of TDXD and have patients have a much nicer adjuvant course by having more patients achieve a PATH-CR.
That's right. It raises questions about what do we do if we are using TDXD then in the neoadjuvant setting and somebody fails to achieve a PATH-CR despite having TDXD followed by THP. You know, what is the optimal adjuvant regimen in that setting? And I don't know if that's clear. Yeah. There was space for physicians to be physicians on the clinical trial. And so some patients saw AC in the adjuvant setting and then TDM1 thereafter. It's going to be challenging to figure out how to incorporate both of these data sets with our current standards because the field is evolving so quickly. We really don't have that sequencing data to guide us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there are trials that are also gestating that we will see in the not too distant future that are looking at adding other things to the HP phase of maintenance in patients who don't achieve a PATH-CR. So I think this space is really evolving at a really rapid clip for us, and we're going to have to figure out how to address all of this. I think that particularly for our higher risk patients, I guess if I had to decide today and I had a higher risk patient, I would probably try and give it to them in the neoadjuvant space, because I think what we most want to achieve is to give our patients the greatest chance of achieving a PATH-CR. And what was really compelling for me with the data that we saw at San Antonio was really the toxicity and tolerability of those 4 cycles of TDXD was very tolerable, and we weren't seeing a high rate of ILD. So, you know, maybe that's a better way to go. Although, you know, I think there are many ways to argue this, but I think it leaves us with a less clear way to approach the patients who don't achieve that PATH-CR.
That's right. Please join us for the next part of our discussion from the 2025 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review in your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Isaacs and Drina. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.